Hi, and welcome to Lakeshore Update. I'm Dee Dodson. On this edition of the podcast, you'll hear the latest on relief for SNAP recipients that may be affected by the partial government shutdown. Services offered by the Gary Public Transportation Corporation could also be affected by the partial government shutdown. Brandon Smith reports on the DCS bill on the House floor aimed to ease caseworkers' workload. And Chris Nolte has a conversation with Kathy Schulf on her specialized travel service for persons with limited mobility. All of that and more on this edition of Lakeshore Update. As the partial government shutdown continues, Northwest Indiana residents who rely on help through programs like SNAP, the food stamp program, and Women, Infants, and Children, or WIC, are among the most vulnerable if the shutdown continues. At the Food Bank of Northwest Indiana, Executive Director Steve Beekman says recipients who got the latest SNAP benefits through February may need help long before the next distribution could take place, even if the shutdown ends soon. You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dodson. Normal service of the Gary Public Transportation Corporation system is endangered by the length of the continued partial shutdown of the federal government. If the federal government shutdown extends beyond early to mid-February 2019, there could be a dual negative effect of reduction in service to a temporary shutdown of all bus transit service that GPTC provides to Northwest Indiana. General Manager Daryl Lampkins warned, quote, "If the shutdown persists the way it is, we will have no choice but to curb service as our funding begins to run out in early to mid-February. Unfortunately, about 65-70% of our funding comes from the federal government, and without access to those funds, our other revenue resources cannot sustain the large drop in funding. At that point, we will be forced to reduce and eventually suspend service unless something changes in Washington, D.C. Those changes would have to include funding for the Federal Transit Administration, from which GPTC receives funding for the capital and non-operational labor costs. The Gary Public Transportation Corporation is ending 2018 with its highest ridership levels since 2010. The 4% ridership increase is as a result of resumed Lakeshore service and the launch of the Broadway Metro Express. A reduction or temporary halt in service could impact long-term customers as well as new riders who have taken advantage of increased service levels, new stops, and new technology. Lampkin urged those who are in the midst of negotiations to continue working towards a solution to the impasse. As hopes for a resolution continue, GPTC staff has to plan for the worst-case scenario. Therefore, effective immediately, GPTC will not be using overtime to fill vacancies and will do their best to keep the public notified of where they have breaks in service. Details of any further service adjustments, reductions, or suspensions will be announced at a later dates. You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dodson. Gary Mayor Karen Freeman Wilson joined a panel of mayors, including the mayors of San Francisco, Seattle, and Philadelphia, on Thursday to discuss the ways they deal with affordable housing and fight homelessness in their cities. The panel discussion, hosted by the Center for American Progress, was held in Washington, D.C. The center is a nonpartisan research and educational institute. As rental and home prices continue to outpace incomes, rental markets tighten, and housing development lags behind population growth, more and more people are struggling to pay rent or afford their mortgage, and homelessness continues to rise. At the same time, the Trump administration has reportedly rolled back fair housing protections and failed to invest in affordable housing at the levels it is desperately needed. The center says cities have become innovation labs for confronting the housing crisis and addressing homelessness. Winnie Stockelberg, the executive president of external affairs for the Center for American Progress, will be the moderator for the panel discussion at the center. You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dodson. Officials in Hammond plan more testing in and around a lake where at least 30 swans have been found dead since late September. The Times reports officials plan more tests around a former Federated Metals facility and will collect water and sediment samples from nearby George Lake. The Hammond Department of Environmental Management released a second round of soil sample results Thursday during a public meeting showing lead contamination levels trending upward along a bike path near the lake. The results, however, are around or below a federal cleanup threshold. Whiting Metals currently operates at the site of the former Federated Metals, which did smelting and recycling there. Officials, including representatives from Whiting Metals, suspect a cap on a Federated Metals landfill is likely failing. You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson. Five abandoned homes where a former Marine strangled and hid the bodies of seven women will be demolished and replaced by memorials to the victims. The Times reports Gary Mayor Karen Freeman Wilson said raising the homes should provide solace to the families of Darren Vann's victims. She goes on to say the city will work with the victims' families to create memorial gardens at the properties. Authorities say Vann preyed on women in an area of Gary known as a hangout for prostitutes and drug dealers. Vann was arrested in 2014 and pled guilty last year to killing Tierra Bately, Africa Hardy, Aneith Jones, Tracy Martin, Christine Williams, Sonia Billingsley, and Tanya Gatlin. Vann is serving life in prison without parole after accepting a plea deal that spared him the death sentence. Vann, who received an other than honorable discharge in 1993, moved to Gary after his July 2013 release from a Texas prison where he served time on a sexual assault involving a prostitute. Freeman Wilson said the demolitions also address blight. Gary Sanitary District and Stormwater Management will provide the $47,000 needed to tear down the homes. One home has already been torn down, and a date hasn't been set for other work to begin on the other four properties. You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson. Indiana regulators have granted a key permit for an organic dairy farm that could become home to more than 4,000 cows in Newton County. Natural Prairie Dairy says its cows will graze on alfalfa and grass that hasn't been treated with synthetic herbicides or pesticides. Critics, including the Hoosier Environmental Council, fear the Northwest Indiana farm could harm wells and reduce property values. The site is near the Nature Conservancy's Kankakee Sands natural area. But the Indiana Department of Environmental Management says Natural Prairie has presented a satisfactory plan to deal with manure, which would be used as fertilizer. Kim Ferrara, a lawyer with the Hoosier Environmental Council, tells the Times that the state's decision is, quote, irresponsible. Dairy manager Will DeJong says planning has improved based on, quote, listening to our neighbors. You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson. South Bend Mayor Pete Buttigieg announced an exploratory committee for a presidential run in a video posted online Tuesday morning. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Jennifer Weingart reports.
Buttigieg has been making moves toward a presidential run for a while now. He made a failed run for DNC chair in 2017, declared last month he wouldn't run for a third term as mayor, and has written a campaign book set to come out February 12th. In the video paid for by his new Pete for America Exploratory Committee, Buttigieg says America needs a fresh start.
The reality is there's no going back, and there's no such thing as again in the real world. We can't look for greatness in the past.
Buttigieg is a South Bend native. He's been mayor since 2012. He's the youngest person to announce a bid for president at 37. No candidate has jumped straight from mayor to president, and few outside of South Bend or political circles know who he is. But Buttigieg was named by former President Barack Obama as a person to watch in the Democratic Party. He's a Rhodes Scholar and a Navy veteran who served a tour of duty in Afghanistan. He lives in South Bend with his husband, Chasten, and their two dogs. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Jennifer Weingart.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson. The Indiana House easily approved legislation Tuesday that seeks to help the Department of Child Services caseworkers by easing some of their job expectations. The measure, which didn't pick up a no vote either in committee or on the House floor, came out of an independent investigator's recommendation last year. The bill makes it easier for the agency to meet legally mandated caseload standards. It also helps DCS caseworkers with initial assessments when they get a report of a child in danger. Bill author and Republican Representative Greg Stuerwall says that includes giving more time to finish the assessment, extending the deadline from 30 to 45 days.
They felt rushed, and sometimes that does not end in the best result.
The bill passed the House 100-0. It now heads to the Senate floor. You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson. Some lawmakers want to connect seniors with students in the name of school safety. The House Education Committee approved a bill Wednesday to create a program that would partner volunteers 55 years or older with students. Representative Chuck Goodrich from Noblesville authored the bill. He says it could improve social and emotional support in schools and ultimately make them safer.
And I think as we grow relationships with our seniors in our schools and our teachers, I think that's our three-legged stool. And an ounce of prevention is absolutely worth a pound of cure.
Three types of schools, urban, suburban, and rural, would each be eligible to receive a $75,000 grant from the Indiana Department of Education. Volunteers in the program would also be eligible for tax deductions. The bill is one of over two dozen bills in the legislature that address school safety, partly in response to the Noblesville West Middle School shooting. You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson. Organizations that provide services for victims of domestic and sexual violence are worried the ongoing government shutdown could hurt their programs if it drags on. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Barbara Brozier reports many of the nonprofits get a significant portion of funding from federal grants.
Bloomington-based Middleway House provides services including emergency housing and legal help for victims of domestic and sexual violence. It received more than $465,000 in federal grants from the Office on Violence Against Women last fiscal year. Executive Director Deborah Morrow says some of that money helps with their transitional housing program, which serves about 30 adults and 65 children annually. She worries how they'll be affected if the shutdown continues.
If we wouldn't be receiving our funding for our transitional housing grant, and we also lost HUD funding, which HUD funding is scheduled to end February 28th, that would really have a huge impact on that program.
The Office of Violence Against Women awarded Indiana organizations nearly $6 million in grants last fiscal year. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Barbara Brozier.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson. The Indiana House adopted a new sexual harassment policy Thursday. 2018 legislation mandated the creation of policies for both chambers in the midst of the Me Too movement. The House rules created a definition of sexual harassment and govern how the Ethics Committee will investigate claims. It also ensures those who bring sexual harassment claims are protected from retaliation. And it bars all sexual contact, even consensual, between legislators and interns. Democratic Representative Sue Errington says the policy was a bipartisan effort.
Making sure that we have a decision that protects the institution, but also provides justice to an individual who would come to the Ethics Committee asking for our help when they are being harassed.
The Senate adopted its own version of a sexual harassment policy earlier this session. You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson. Indiana's governor will appoint the state's next schools chief under a bill passed by House lawmakers Thursday. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Jenny Lindsay reports, despite the bill moving forward, some have concerns about too much power in one place.
The governor begins appointing a secretary of education in 2025 instead of Hoosiers electing a superintendent of public instruction. Current schools chief Jennifer McCormick announced last year she won't run for re-election. Now, lawmakers want the governor to appoint her successor in 2021 instead of hosting one last election. Many, including a handful of Democrats, are on board with the plan. Others, like Representative Matt Pierce, say it may improve efficiency.
But you're concentrating the power. You're losing diversity of voices and views.
Republicans rejected a change earlier this week that would have required the appointed secretary to have experience in public K-12 schools. The bill now heads to the Senate. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Jeannie Lindsay.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson. Muncie's former building commissioner will spend 2 years in federal prison after the government says he used his office to defraud the city. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Stephanie Weichman reports.
Former Muncie Building Commissioner Craig Nichols pleaded guilty to 2 of 34 federal charges against him as part of a deal, wire fraud and money laundering. He'll serve 2 years. Federal officials say Nichols defrauded the city of Muncie out of nearly $300,000 by billing for fake house demolitions and inflated asbestos inspections through companies he owned, using his position as building commissioner to do so. He'll also have to pay back much of that money, just under $218,000, according to the court. But Nichols' defense says that will be difficult. Nichols has admitted to a gambling problem, and lawyers say he has no proceeds left from his crimes. Nichols was arrested after an FBI raid on Muncie City Hall in January 2017. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Stephanie Weichman.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson. Kokomo Mayor Greg Goodnight says he's not running for re-election because he doesn't want to be part of an election made up of people running for the wrong reasons. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Joe Wren sat down with Goodnight to learn more about why he isn't seeking a fourth term.
There was not one reason, really. I mean, it was a lot in my head. I had kind of added up the reasons why I should and the reasons why I shouldn't. And, you know, I bounced this around internally and talked to a few different people, just kind of got their opinions over the last 3 or 4 months, and just decided, you know, when elections become about personalities and people having access to grind and things like that, it's not good for the community. And I do care enough about this community that I don't want elections to be about personalities. I want it to be about ideas. And so I think it's best that I don't run this year.
So what do you mean by that? Not re-elections by personalities or axe to grind?
Sometimes you have people running for office, whether it be a mayor's office or a city council candidate, that are former employees that didn't get the promotion they wanted, things didn't go their way, all those things, and you can run for the wrong reasons. I don't want to be a part of that. And, I felt like I've always had the best interest and our staff has had the best interest of the citizens of Kokomo at heart. And sometimes you have to make unpopular decisions to move the community forward. And felt like we've done that. And I don't want to be a part of the people that just, have an axe to grind are running for selfish reasons.
So this wasn't a decision you just made back in August or a long time ago this past year. It's something you kind of came to the realization to recently, it sounds like.
Yeah, this was after I was elected to a third term. You know, it was always in the back of my mind. And I give this story that on December 4th, David Tharp came into my office with a newspaper article that showed that I became the longest serving mayor in the city's history. And that's great, but I don't know if that's what I want to be remembered as, the one that was there the longest. I want to, feel like, I was maybe the one that maybe moved the ball forward. And in a lot of ways, I feel like we have.
So probably too early to get to this, but do you have some plans of what you'd like to do next? You want to stay in politics?
I really don't know what's next. My joke is my next move is to put together a resume. So I've got 11 months to do that, but I will probably do that in the next couple of months.
So now that this is your last year as mayor, time goes by really fast. So I'm sure you have a checklist of things you'd like to get done.
I do. There's some of the things that we've started and we've initiated. We want to make sure those are completed. So we're doing some trail work around the watershed, the Wildcat Creek in downtown Kokomo, and that's under construction now. We've announced a hotel conference center. We want to make sure that I probably won't be around for the ribbon cutting, but I want to make sure that we've announced that and that becomes completed. And there's a few other projects that we've started. And some small things, some improvements in our parks at Kokomo Beach that we've already announced, and I want to make sure that those are completed. And I don't want them to become political footballs, or even the small things to become political footballs, where every barking dog and every trash can or a traffic cone becomes a political fight. I think our citizens deserve more than that. And so I didn't want to be, I'll take the my job is to finish the job and I'll take the hits for whatever happens this year. But my goal and intentions is to leave the city in better shape than when I found it. And that's what we're going to do.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson. America's jails and prisons have a big problem treating inmates with mental health issues. In Illinois, a federal judge has ordered the state prison system to do better. But as Side Effects Public Media's Christine Herman reports, change hasn't come. Please note, this report includes sensitive language.
Ashur Rasho is 43 years old, and he spent more than half of those years in a prison cell for 22 to 24 hours a day. That's two decades, with no meaningful social interaction.
It was pretty broken down, the whole system, the way they treated us.
Rasho has been diagnosed with several mental health problems. In prison, he says little things would trigger him, and he'd respond violently. He was jailed on robbery and burglary charges, but his sentence got extended over and over for assaults on prison staff.
Even though they would label us schizophrenic or bipolar or anything, we would still be considered a behavioral problem. So the only best thing for them to do is keep us isolated. That's how they pretty much was dealing with us. Or they heavily medicate you.
Rasho's cell was no larger than a parking space, so narrow he could reach his arms out and touch both walls at once. He had hallucinations, engaged in self-mutilation, and tried to kill himself. None of that surprises Dr. Stuart Grassian.
Well, you're looking at the population of a state psychiatric hospital. They're not the worst of the worst. They're the sickest of the sick, the wretched of the earth.
Grassian is a psychiatrist who spent 25 years at Harvard studying how the conditions in solitary confinement cause harm, especially for the mentally ill. He's met hundreds of inmates like Rasho who've served long sentences in extreme isolation.
Maybe they weren't even that bad before they got in, and they just get worse and worse. It's a tragedy, absolutely immoral to see that happen to people.
But it's happening across the U.S. When large psychiatric institutions closed down in the mid-1950s, they weren't replaced with mental health services in the community. So many people with mental illness end up in jails and prisons that aren't equipped to treat them. The problem is particularly bad in Illinois, which ranks near last for healthcare spending on inmates.
When you walk through these galleries, you get overwhelmed by the pain and suffering that you see in front of you.
That's attorney Alan Mills. He represents Rasho and thousands of other inmates with mental illness who sued the state in 2007. They wanted better treatment. It took until 2016 for Illinois to agree in a settlement to revamp mental health care. But a federal judge recently ruled that it remains, quote, grossly insufficient, and he criticized the state for the slow pace of reforms. Even state officials acknowledge the problem. John Baldwin has led the Illinois Department of Corrections since 2015.
Corrections in Illinois was a little slow to recognize the fact that we are the mental health system for Illinois. Whether we want to be or not, we are, and we have to start acting like it.
Baldwin says they've hired more mental health staff, Most inmates now spend at least 8 hours a week out of their cell and see a therapist once a month. And nearly 800 of the sickest inmates have been transferred to new treatment facilities where they're finally receiving appropriate care. But Mills points out that's a small fraction of the 12,000 who are mentally ill.
And for the vast majority of those, not a lot has changed. They simply are not getting the kind of treatment that they need in order to improve their situation at all.
As for Rosho, he got out of prison for a while, but is now back. When we spoke last May, he said his experiences in solitary confinement still haunted him.
I don't sleep right. Any little thing triggers something in me.
Mills says lawsuits don't always solve problems, at least not right away.
A court order is great, but it's a piece of paper. It's not actually treatment.
Now, more than 10 years after the lawsuit began, it's far from over. Days before Christmas, a federal judge again ordered Illinois to correct widespread deficiencies. I'm Christine Herman, Side Effects Public Media.
Coming up next, a look at some of the changes in Illinois' prison system and whether they're coming fast enough.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
You just heard about the thousands of Illinois prisoners with mental illness waiting for long overdue treatment. Now, we look at solutions offered by the state a decade after it was sued over the problem. Side Effects Public Media's Christine Herman goes inside a new treatment center. Please note, this report includes sensitive language.
I'm walking with Andrea Tack, the warden here at the Joliet Treatment Center just southwest of Chicago. It doesn't look like a prison. Half a dozen single-story buildings, which they call dorms, surround a big grassy area.
I always refer to it as the quad. It reminds me of some of the college campuses that have kind of that big center lawn area and then all of the classrooms surround it.
But unlike a college, it's surrounded by two layers of barbed wire fence. This place used to be a detention center for youth. A few years ago, Illinois spent $17 million to convert it into a mental health treatment facility for prisoners. It now houses about 100 of the state's sickest inmates. As we pass the dining hall on the quad, a group of inmates walk out.
Hi, you guys. How was lunch?
The men shout back. One of them wants to talk with the warden. She promises to come find him later. Inmates here spend about 30 hours a week out of their cell. They go to meals, work out at the gym, take GED classes and get job training, and of course, receive therapy. And that stands in stark contrast to some other prisons, like Pontiac Correctional Center. There, inmates with mental illness are often kept isolated and are lucky to get even 1 hour of treatment a month. That's according to Dr. Pablo Stewart, a psychiatrist. He's overseeing a class action settlement calling for an overhaul of Illinois' prison system.
Almost everyone in the so-called mental health unit at Pontiac should be at Joliet. And if they were at Joliet, there would not be the same type of problems.
The problems Stewart's talking about are behavior issues, often due to untreated mental illness. Inmates with behavior problems across Illinois get transferred to Pontiac, and the prison just doesn't have the staff to provide mental health care to all who need it. So many of these inmates get placed in segregation, with little or no meaningful treatment and social interaction. And Stewart says they deteriorate.
These people in segregation that are mentally ill end up throwing feces or urine at staff, end up exposing themselves and masturbating in front of female staff.
They get into fights with other inmates and with prison staff. Stewart says the workers themselves are traumatized and they retaliate. Based on interviews with inmates and staff, Stewart says he's convinced that Pontiac staffers abuse inmates. Stewart says Joliet is one Illinois facility that's finally providing adequate mental health treatment, but that should be the norm.
It shouldn't be seen as, you know, unique or anything else. That's the standard of care that's required.
Warden Tack says transferred inmates have made huge strides. People who had tried to hang themselves or were violent,
now they're out and about in the community, interacting with others. Some are serving as mentors for other residents.
Alan Mills, who represents inmates on the class action suit, has seen this too.
It's a difficult transition because you've been treated in a place where you're continually traumatized, and then you get to a place where actually people care about you.
Prison officials say they're committed to improving care, but they still don't have enough mental health workers. A federal judge has given them until March to fix this. Nearly 800 inmates have been transferred to Joliet and three similar facilities. But for thousands of other mentally ill inmates in Illinois, not much has changed. I'm Christine Herman, Side Effects Public Media.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
2019 is underway, and Lakeshore Public Radio looks back on some of the best movies of 2018. Lakeshore Public Radio's Sharon Jackson spoke with editor and film critic Patrick McDonald with HollywoodChicago.com to get his count on the top five movies of last year. McDonald is also the chief tour guide of the Chicago Film Tour at ChicagoFilmTour.com.
2018 behind us, but memories of movies, good and bad, still obviously with us. And you have some picks. Let us know what your top five are movies of 2018.
So I'm going to move to number five right now, the horror film of the year. But I don't really consider horror films in that category as such. I consider them films. If they're a great film, they're going to work. And that number five on my list is Hereditary, with Toni Collette as a mother whose mother dies.
It's heartening to see so many strange new faces here today. I know my mom would be very touched.
And we start to find out a little bit about her family tree, how it affects her two children and her husband.
My mother was a very secretive and private woman.
And it really has an Exorcist vibe to it. That's what I like to compare it to. It has a creepiness factor.
It's Grandma. You know you were her favorite, right? Even when you're a little baby, she wouldn't let me feed you because she needed to feed you.
Plus, there is an element of truth in it.
She was a very difficult woman, which maybe explains me.
About our lives and our, in the sense of the Exorcist's faith.
Sometimes I swear I can feel them in the room.
In this one, it's family. So that's number five. Number four, we're back to the populist one, the Black Panther.
I have seen gods fly.
The Black Panther movie. To me, this is one of the best superhero movies ever made.
I've seen men build weapons that I couldn't even imagine.
And again, I think it's accessible to everyone.
I've seen aliens drop from the sky.
Yeah.
But I have never seen anything like this. How much more are you hiding?
We have a director who's a visionary, Ryan Coogler. Remember that name, because this guy knows what his vision is. He also borrows from cinema of the past. He was able to revive the Rocky franchise with Creed, and now he's redefined the superhero movie.
My son, it is your time.
Show me my respect and bow down.
You get to decide what kind of king you are going to be.
Basically about the Black experience, both in Africa and in America, and we all know the particular history with America. So, Black Panther, number four. Did you see Black Panther?
No, I have not, and I haven't seen Hereditary either, but I've heard great things about both of them.
Yeah, and I'll remind you that Black Panther, Hereditary on DVD and digital. Now, my number three film is a local film, a local effort. It's a documentary by the great Cartemquin Films, who gave us Hoop Dreams. This is getting some Oscar buzz. Minding the Gap.
Take one.
I'm making this film because I saw myself in your story.
Minding the Gap. And this is available on Hulu right now. So if you have Hulu, that's definitely download this one. So this is an extraordinary accidental documentary. It's organic both in its subject and its nature.
I always felt like I didn't fit in with my family.
My parents ran this very controlling house. I ran away a lot.
Skateboarding is more of a family than my family.
The filmmaker is Bing Liu, and he sought to understand his skateboard past in Rockford, Illinois.
How did you get disciplined?
I mean, well, they call it child abuse now, but
life might be moving too fast.
Now, Rockford is a kind of an underwater town. They used to have a lot of industry. And of course, people are leaving, and There's a lot of problems there, but
we have to fully grow up, and it's going to suck.
In exploring his skateboarding past, both in present skateboarders in Rockford and some people he knew, he found a common thread that became the stunning thesis of the film.
When you're a kid, you just do. You just act. And then somewhere along the line, everyone loses that.
And I say no more, because it's just a beautiful movie about redemption and hope and family. Minding the Gap on Hulu. That's number three. Number two, now we're going to get into the art film aspect of it, but this is in limited theaters right now, but at the Cannes Film Festival, it got a 15-minute standing ovation at the end. So it's not just me being a snooty critic, it's the snooty people in France. So, but a little background on this. The film is named Capernaum, and it means chaos. And it's just a masterpiece of our modern times. The director is Nadine Labaki, and she's had some notable foreign language films over the years, including Caramel and What Do We Do Now? I would recommend both those movies. But she is really into the social aspect of life and immigration. And here we have an immigration story focusing on a 12-year-old boy named Zane, who is disappointed that he was born into the family he was born into. His sister is his biggest companion, and because the family is undocumented in Lebanon, they sell his sister to the local merchant for marriage. This sets the kid off. He escapes from the family. He eventually develops another kind of family situation. He eventually gets arrested, and he goes on the media and actually sues his parents for bringing him into the world. An extraordinary story.
Wow,
multi-layered. Yeah. I can't say enough about this film, Capernaum, meaning chaos. It should, of course, be in the DVD digital very soon. It's in limited theaters, but look out for it. All right?
Yeah.
So you're ready for number one?
I'm ready. Drum roll. Here we go.
Drum roll, please. This is actually on Netflix right now, so anybody can go and see it who has that service. And it is Roma. Roma is directed and written by the director Alfonso Cuarón. And he did Gravity a few years back with Sandra Bullock. So if a filmmaker is lucky and talented enough, the stars will align and they will get a shot to making their magnum opus that comes from their consciousness, rendered the film into the soul of the audience. And this is exactly what this film is. It's a beautiful, beautiful black and white film. Shades of Federico Fellini's 8.5. You really want to get into a film geek kind of a realm here. But it's about a neighborhood in Mexico City called Roma, where a upper middle class family is living. They have a domestic maid named Cleo, and a crisis occurs in the family where the father leaves. So the mother has to learn how to survive. Cleo gets pregnant. She has to learn to deal with this. That's the essential story. But basically what is going on is a celebration of life and survival, set in the early 1970s. So a beautiful film, Roma, a must-see, on Netflix right now.
Good list. Thank you so much. I need to put it down on all my lists because I've seen none of them.
All right. Happy New Year to everybody. 2019, I'm sure, will bring some other cinema treats for everybody.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Here's regionally speaking host Chris Nolte with a conversation with Kathy Schoaf of Elite Cruises and Vacations.
A Hobart High School graduate has come back to Northwest Indiana to create a business which in turn is helping folks that have special needs to be able to enjoy life, in particular by taking cruises. We have with us to talk about it Kathy Schoaf. Thank you for joining us on Regionally Speaking today.
Thank you so much for inviting me. I am happy to join you. I am actually on the Holland America MS Oosterdam in the middle of the Eastern Caribbean.
Oh, my.
On a group cruise with a group of dementia-friendly clients and their caregivers. Mm-hmm. And we are having an amazing time. So I'm excited to talk to you. The view outside of my window right now does not include snow.
Well, unfortunately, my view does, you know, at least not from this studio, but certainly outside the building.
I was hearing that.
Yes, that's the case here. Well, tell us a little bit, Kathy, tell us a little bit about your about growing up in Hobart, going to high school in Hobart, and eventually, too, ending up going to Ball State University to get your nursing degree. What was the experience like going from Northwest Indiana all the way over to Eastern Indiana to Muncie to get your degree, and then coming back to Northwest Indiana and eventually to create Elite Cruises and Vacations?
Well, my life in Northwest Indiana was amazing. I had a wonderful high school experience consisting of biology and lots of music hours. I also have worked many hours with music performance, which is probably what actually led me to Ball State. I performed aggressively and studied music at both Valparaiso and Ball State, and then ended up a BSN in nursing. Mm-hmm. And so my career has taken me all over the country. I have lived in Texas and Illinois and Pennsylvania and New York, California. And I come back to Northwest Indiana excited and happy to base my business there. But I have clients in 39 states and all over Canada.
Now, you take the business Elite Cruises and Vacations, and you've turned it into a very specialized travel agency. What was it your nursing experience that got you in that direction?
Absolutely. I was the director of nursing and regional director for senior living options, for home health agencies, for hospice communities. And I just wanted somehow to create a way that everyone could still enjoy their life. I wanted to give families, loved ones, caregivers the opportunity to still enjoy their loved ones' experiences with their loved ones, with their families, without any barriers. So we create travel options for clients with cognitive impairment, dementia, COPD, heart issues, cancer complications, Alzheimer's disease, weakness, slow walkers, Parkinson's, and any other conceptual medical issue that exists. I travel with a group of professionals, including additional RNs, and we see that everyone has a safe, comfortable, happy experience.
What's it like to be able to set up your business to work with so many professionals as well as members of the family of the people who are really, I'm sure, enjoy the cruises as much, if not more so, than other people do? What's it like to be able to work with all these professionals and, in turn, working with the cruise lines, since you have, in this case, you're working with the Holland American Cruises?
The professionals that I work with are very, very carefully handpicked. We all have a very like-minded attitude to get the job done, because I don't necessarily have the ability to anticipate what complications, challenges might exist, and we have to be prepared to handle all of those challenges and meet the needs of not only our clients but all of their caregivers. Number one priority, keeping everyone safe, and number two, providing an experience which allows them to have lifelong amazing memories. As far as working with the cruise lines, I'm also very careful how I choose those cruise lines. We work with Holland America and Celebrity Cruise Lines because they are anxiously willing to be supportive and communicative about what I need their staff to do in order to make this successful. I have had the privilege to have dinner with the president of Holland America. I meet with the full cruise ship staff, including the captain and his other officers, before we ever sail. Everyone's fully aware of what challenges we are bringing on board his ship. But on the other hand, he has an MD on every single ship, and I do not hesitate to send a client to see a doctor if we have an issue. And I assure him that we will manage, you know, situations and problems as they arise and seek professional assistance as needed.
Mm-hmm. Are you aware, if it just happens to be in this case, what you mentioned with Holland America, that this particular cruise line has thought so well ahead in being able to take advantage of having passengers of this type on board their ships? Maybe some of the other cruise lines, if they haven't already, that they might be following suit, and you'll be having more opportunities out there for more cruises?
At this time, Holland America is excited about the opportunities. Like I said, celebrity is also, I don't see that kind of conversation coming from any other lines right now. But Holland America, and between Holland America and celebrity, I can honestly travel with clients any place in the world, literally on all seven continents, any place in the world that anyone would wish to go. There's no exclusions. We are willing to take a group, to take to whichever parts of the world they are interested in going. And we have 9 cruises scheduled for 2019 right now, which will be created in groups. And we're more than happy to add to that list with someone showing interest.
Well, it sounds like this is a great opportunity for people who maybe would never, ever have a chance to be on a cruise ship anytime during their life and during the time that maybe that they might need some help, and certainly an opportunity to enjoy themselves the most. It sounds like the Kathy, you and others that you work with Elite Cruises and Vacations are on the right track, and you've got plenty of things planned. So you're going to keep a lot of people busy on taking advantage of a lot of cruises in the future. And we're glad that you spent some time to talk about this with us today.
Thank you so much. I receive many accommodations and wonderful, happy clients that come and return and travel with us repeatedly. You know, we're always seeking to be able to have new first-time clients to our group, but many of our cruisers, travelers come back and travel with us additionally again.
We've been talking with Kathy Schoaf. She's an RN. She's a native of Northwest Indiana, went to Hobart High School, attended Valparaiso University. She's also a Ball State University graduate. That's where she got her nursing degree. And she has created and takes advantage of opportunities to set up cruises with her own company, a specialized travel agency called Elite Cruises and Vacations, where those folks who have special needs in particular can enjoy the time being on the cruise ship like anybody else can.
Regionally Speaking with host Chris Nolte can be heard each Monday through Thursday at noon on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM and streaming online at lakeshorepublicradio.org, where you can also find podcasts of the show when you click on the program link. For the latest in local news and information, tune in Monday at 6 a.m. for Morning Edition with local host Chris Nolte. Lakeshore Update is supported by the listeners and members of Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM. Podcasts for Lakeshore Update are posted each Friday on our website, lakeshorepublicradio.org, as well as on NPR One. Make sure you search for WLPR and select us as your home station. Music for Lakeshore Update was written and produced by BenSound.com. For Lakeshore Update, I'm Dee Dotson.